Who among us hasn't wanted to live forever? I definitely want to live forever. And now I can. This intro story comes out of Lad Bible. It was written by Jess Hardiman. Hardiman? Something like that. Biohacker Brian Johnson is getting his penis injected as part of his $2 million a year mission to look younger, with the entrepreneur dubbing this part of the process.
Sorry, did you say mission or emission? Ayo.
Part of the process rejuvenating Johnson's Johnson. The 46-year-old claims to have the biological age of an 18-year-old and believes in his anti-aging and longevity methods so much that he has made a career out of it with what he's dubbed Project Blueprint. How do you make a career out of that? You at home can spend $2 million a year to be 18 again. Like, what the fuck? It's just like solely marketing to billionaires who are psychotic. Johnson, who sold his payment processing tech business Braintree Venmo to PayPal for $800 million a decade ago, has a team of 30 doctors headed by Cambridge-based anti-aging expert Dr. Oliver Zolman. Zolman closely monitors his blood, heart, liver, kidneys, brain, blood cells, and sexual health. His strict regime involves downing 80 vitamins and mineral supplements every day alongside a very precise 1,977 calorie diet. Johnson also exercises for at least half an hour a day, hits the sack at precisely 8:30 p.m. every night, lasers away any skin sun damage, zaps his pelvic floor muscles with electromagnets, and even placates the vagus nerve, which controls stress, with a clip-on gadget. In his latest move, he's turning his attention to his penis, which he can apparently get injected to help him achieve a prolonged erection, among other things. "I'm getting my penis injected Friday, which is an arousing topic," he said on Twitter, adding he was rejuvenating Johnson's Johnson. Johnson went on to explain the steps of the process and what they'd be focusing on, which are penis injection with alprostadil. Yep, get that in your dick. That helps for a prolonged erection. They're measuring the penile artery and the peak and minimum blood flow, the ejaculation volume, the max urination speed, and the sperm motility.
Jesus.
So, Lockie, are you scrambling to think of how you can scrape together $2 million a year so you can live forever like Brian Johnson?
I'm just wondering that medical team of 30 staff he has working for him. Imagine studying for, what is it, like 7 years to become a doctor to end up just being some almost billionaire's insane bid to try and hold on to their youth.
The thing I like from their perspective, like I think there could be two things happening. Well, yeah, exactly. It's either a grift.
Getting paid.
They just know that they can just milk this almost billionaire for the rest of his life.
I think like, you know, he's paying them to be doctors and look at him closely with the overall goal of trying to, you know, ensure that he is as healthy as possible. Like, I don't think it's a grift. I just think like, you know, beyond the money aspect, if I studied for 7 fucking years, and that's minimum before you got to this point, and you said this is what it was all for, to just stroke this single millionaire's ego to desperately cling on to his fading sense of youth. It's just so sad.
It is insane. Look, I think the other reason that they could be doing it is because maybe they're just curious to see if they even can. If they can actually prolong this billionaire's life. I don't believe this bullshit saying that he's actually biologically 18. Like, get fucked. Like, that has to be a grift. How can they measure your biological age? It just, yeah, it sounds like this dude's just incredibly mentally ill and terrified of death. And
yeah,
he's just getting milked for all he's worth. I watched a video the other day on this guy who spent a day with this man. This guy's life is a living hell. His literal entire life from when he wakes up in the morning to when he goes to bed is dedicated to making his life longer in every way. It is awful. He fasts wow. most of the day. He barely eats. Yeah. Like, I feel like if this guy had like a milkshake, he'd just die. He'd just fall apart because his entire system is like that pinpoint.
Nah, the stress regulator would like the chip in his brain would blow because it's too much stress of the him having the desire to have the milkshake.
Get this right.
I don't know. Yeah, it's so sad.
It's not even mentioned in this article, but this guy also uses his son as a fucking blood bag. He gets blood transfusions from his young son. He's like 18 or 19.
Oh, man.
It is so fucking creepy, man.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. See, this is just severe mental illness that's gone completely unchecked because they have money and power.
Yeah. These are the people that are running the world, Lockie. These are the people who are holding the all of the cards. The vampires
that are feeding on the blood of their children to try and stave off their eventual demise.
Hello and welcome to News to Reviews, your place to be for gaming news stories and also your place to be for impressions on the latest games coming out each and every week. My name is Zach and we have returning Lockie's back. Lockie's back.
My queen. My queen. And that's actually, Zach was saying I looked a bit like Jon Snow before and it's doing my head in because I saw the most recent sort of depiction of the upcoming Jon Snow show. I saw the still of him with like rope and crap on his face and looking like a zombie, and I was just like, no, this looks like more season 7, season 8 bullshit. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. When's my House of the Dragon coming?
You don't want more of, I don't want to be king. I don't want it.
I don't
want
to be a king. I'm not a character.
I don't want to be co-host. I don't want it.
I'm a stand-in for the audience. I'm not meant to have this much agency. Ah, oh, so boring. It's like the worst character.
100%. 100%. But yeah, welcome back, Lockie. I've missed having you on the show, but I'm glad
I've missed being on the show as well.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you got to have some rest. And, yeah, so you can get back to it. If you like News to Reviews, we don't have a guest this week, as you can hear. Oh, fuck. Yeah, I've got so much stuff I want to say at the start here. Holy shit. So, yeah, we were supposed to have Semi Deej on this week. Unfortunately, he is having internet issues, so he had to pull out of that one. But we will be getting him on the show in a few weeks' time.
This is a plausible excuse.
Oh, yeah.
We have very shitty internet in this country.
It'll be like an episode like, so what do you think, Sammy? Yeah, but sucks that we didn't manage to get him on this week because Sammy Deej, as everyone will know, listens to this show, is a member of the Inconsolables. And we always have the Inconsolables on this show because we love them and they're absolutely amazing. And Lockie and I have both popped on their show a whole bunch of times. I'm sure our audience is very familiar with them. But yeah, on Twitter this week, Andrew announced that the Inconsolables is coming to a close. They've still got a bunch of episodes left. I think, I can't remember what episode they were aiming for. It was like 350 or 370. But yeah, they've still got a few left in the pipeline, so they're not going away right away. But yeah, I have to say something. Like, I absolutely love the Inconsolables. I listened to them before I ever started News to Reviews with Lockie. And I remember just listening to one of their episodes a couple of months into starting the podcast and Sammy Deej mentioning, oh, if you want a guest on the show, let us know. I'm like, oh, should I reach out to him? And I messaged Sammy on Twitter and he's like, yeah, sure, jump on the show. And I couldn't believe that podcasters and content creators that I looked up to and was a fan of were going to have me on their show. And you know, I got to meet them all, and that was still back when Paul was on the show as well too, and instantly became friends with all of them. And obviously, as you know, worked with them loads and loads over the years. I'm really going to miss their show. It's going to be super weird not getting to listen to the Inconsolables on a Tuesday or a Wednesday and hear them tackle everything and rage against the games industry. It's going to be weird, but, you know, I wish them all the best. They've all got super, super busy lives, and, you know, that is the reason why it is coming to a close. They've been doing it for 7 years. I'm going to keep nagging them to come on News to Review, so don't worry, you'll still hear their voices here. So long as they're still willing to pop on the show, I'll never stop asking them to pop by, because they're always just a delight to talk to and catch up with, and just a delight to have as guests on the show. Lockie, do you have anything you want to say?
Oh, I'm sad to hear it. It's the end of an era. They're fantastic. They're a hilarious group and wonderful human beings. I wish them all the best for whatever their next endeavors are. I know a lot of them have a lot of... They've been very, very fortunate in their families, and I'm sure if they're making the decision to focus more time on that, I'm sure it's the right one. But yeah, I wish them the best of success in whatever they might do in the future.
Yeah. Much love from the News to Reviews crew. Wanted to let everyone know. Let's just get into the gaming news now, shall we? Change pace here. It feels weird to be like rate and review after talking about that. We have a bunch of interesting gaming news to get to, Lockie. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Volition, the game studio Volition. They were first Parallax Software back in 1993 until the co-founders split up and Mike Kulis stayed on but changed the name to Volition in 1996. So they've been in business for over 30 years. They're known for games such as Red Faction, the Saints Row games, some titles that people have some mad nostalgia for and really, really appreciated. It's sad to say that Volition has come to a close effective immediately. A statement from Volition: the Volition team has proudly created world-class entertainment for fans around the globe for 30 years. We've been driven by a passion for our community and always work to deliver joy, surprise, and delight. This past June, Embracer Group announced a restructuring program to strengthen Embracer and maintain its position as a leader in the video game industry. As part of that program, they evaluated strategic and operational goals and made the difficult decision to close Volition, effective immediately. To help our team, we are working to provide job assistance and help smooth the transition for our Volition family members. We thank our customers and fans around the world for all the love and support over the years. You will always be in our hearts. Volition Games. Oh, some sad news here, man. Like, I'm not a big fan of the studio, but for a studio that's been in business for 30 years and has, like, quite a prolific history in game development, it's sad to see, like, once again the end of a era. Funny to be talking about this straight after the Inconsolables coming to an end, talking about that. Lockie, what are your thoughts about Volition shutting
their
doors?
All of my empathy is burnt out on the Inconsolables, so I don't really give a fuck about this one. It's so cold. I think I'm going to try and put my mind in the shoes of people that might enjoy Volition's game. So they did fuck, what do they do? It was the Grand Theft Auto knockoff.
Saints Row.
Saints Row, that's it. So that was their big thing. I don't know if they've done any other big hitters than that. I always liked seeing the Saints Row franchise kind of from afar as a bit of, like, kind of nipping at the heels of the Grand Theft Auto juggernaut, because it at least demonstrated that there were other competitors that could enter into the market. They tried doing some really wacky shit that you wouldn't see in Grand Theft Auto, which was nice. A little bit more cartoony, a little bit more anime, colorful and neon. But unfortunately, the games were hot garbage and I couldn't get into them. So, like, you know, it's sad to see that they're calling it quits. I hope the developers and all the people that are on it are able to find their feet and find their footing elsewhere, in a studio that's on the up and up. Perhaps they could end up working on the next Grand Theft Auto game. That seems like good synergy.
Yeah. Look, they have not made a decent game for a while. It has been since Saints Row the Third, which was in 2011. Since after that, they had Saints Row 4, which people definitely didn't enjoy as much. I've played a bit of it this year recently, thanks to PS Plus Extra, and yeah, I could only get a few hours in. I was not too into it. It was really such a weird story, and so it was very bizarre. And then after that, they had, what was it? I can't even remember what it was called. It was like another open world superhero style game. It did super, super poorly. And then obviously everyone knows what happened with the Saints Row reboot just last year. Now, that was the thing that, you know, Embracer Group, after Embracer Group had acquired them, that they were putting out next. So they had a lot riding on that game, and clearly Embracer wasn't happy with how this worked out. Now, there's other reasons as to why this happened. Embracer tried to acquire $2 billion of funding from a Saudi-backed group. The Saudis are basically trying to invest into the games industry at the moment, kind of like what they're doing with sports, like golf and whatnot. That deal fell through, and their stock price plummeted, which is why they've had to do a bunch of restructuring why they've had to now shutter Volition. I understand why it's happening, as I mentioned. Yeah, they haven't had a good game in a very long time. But yeah, it's just sad to see a studio have this kind of demise and, yeah, sort of fizzle out this way.
So what you're saying is that they're shutting down not of their own volition.
Yup.
Thank you.
That was you here all week, hey, Lockie? Yup.
Thank you.
Well, you know what's definitely not going to be here this week, Lockie?
Yeah.
Elder Scrolls 6.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not going to be out for a while.
Oh, yeah. Todd Howard has confirmed that Elder Scrolls 6 has entered early development.
Todd Howard is begging everyone to leave him alone, asking when Elder Scrolls 6 is coming out.
Elder Scrolls 6 was announced in 2018.
It was announced like a day after Skyrim was released 1,000 years ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, officially, like,
yeah, in the before times. It was like, I was saying this in our group chat, because we actually do, believe it or not, listeners of the show, but we like to discuss games and news in our free time. How crazy is that?
Yeah, we're weird.
And just reflecting on the fact that Skyrim was released well over a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just so long ago. And I have severe doubts that magic of that period of Elder Scrolls and what they were releasing, Morrowind, Skyrim, Oblivion, that ramp up, I don't think that that's going to be replicated. I think what currently exists as Bethesda now is nothing like what it was. I don't know. I'm extremely hesitant to believe that they're going to be able to do it justice. So I'm not all that excited. Call it getting older because it's been so fucking long. I'm old now.
Yeah, look, I don't blame you, Lockie. Bethesda as a development studio, not as a publisher, because they've published some fucking awesome games over the last 5-6 years. But as far as a development studio is concerned, I'd say they haven't had a hit since, well, a decent game since Fallout 4, which is 2015. And even Fallout...
And that wasn't even that good.
Like, yeah, it was like, it was decent, but it was like, no. Yeah. It got like, you know, a lot of
nines.
It
was no Fallout 3, let's just put it that way.
Exactly. No, it was no Skyrim. But it did get a lot of nines and some eights and whatnot. And
I know, but the bullshit shill nines and eights, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's I had a lot of fun with it, but yeah, I definitely would not have. It's probably like an 8 out of 10 RPG for me, which is still decent. And it has an 87 on Metacritic right now with a 6.8 user score. Now, as far as
yeah, see, this is why I don't listen at all to critic aggregates, because like majority of those companies are trying to get ad revenue through clicks, or they're trying to make sure that they're upholding a certain reputation to ensure that they're seen as a shill company to potentially have some sort of deals. I don't know, marketing deals or what have you. But that's why I don't trust it at all. But the user scores that. I trust much more, and a 6.8 sounds pretty fucking fair.
Yeah, and look, we might be saying the same thing with Starfield. It sounds kind of like that. It's not getting 10s and stuff like Skyrim did. It's sitting right now at 88 on Metacritic, the PC version, at the very least. An 87, the Xbox Series X version, but we haven't had the user scores come in yet because it's only the deluxe version is available to play right now. So it sounds like if the reviews are accurate, we're expecting like a Fallout 4 quality level RPG here. So, yeah, I see what you mean. Like, it's too early to be excited anyway for Elder Scrolls 6, but I think you're right. Bethesda is a different studio to what it was 15 years ago, and I don't think we're going to see exactly that magic happen again, but I'll still play an Elder Scrolls 6 when it comes out. Fuck yeah, let's go.
Oh, yeah, like, if I'm still alive by then, I'll give it a go. Like, shit.
Yeah, do you reckon he might have announced it too early, Lockie? 2018, early development didn't start till... That means it would have been in concept stages for 5 years. I do not believe that. Not for a fucking second. There's no way that this has been in concept for 5 years and then it's just entered early development. Like, I reckon they did the fucking title. They didn't even come up with a name, but they just did that fucking thing they showed off at 2018 where they just showed Mountains and Elder Scrolls 6, and then that's all they've done until this year when they've started concept. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's just been too long. And I'm old now and I'm bitter, and I'm blaming the fact that I'm old and bitter directly on Bethesda for not releasing another Elder Scrolls game sooner.
Elder Scrolls 6, I'm going to call it now, will not come out till around 2028, and it could even be a next-gen console game. I don't think it'll be exclusive, but it will probably be like split between whatever the next Xbox is and the new one.
I just want to remind Bethesda, you know, it's great that you want to do it justice and everything or whatever in theory, but like also get a move on. We're not going to live forever. and it just saddens me to think of all the people that have died in between the release of those two titles that will never get to experience the next one. It's like, fucking get a move on. Like, you know, I understand avoiding crunch and all that, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I completely disagree with that one. For me personally, it's take all the time you need. I can have Elder Scrolls 6 in fucking 2030. I don't care. As long as it's good and people don't suffer to make it. That's all I care about.
No, life is short. Get a move on.
Well, you know who did get a move on? Nintendo, when they brought out the Nintendo Switch. Lockie, the Nintendo Switch has now outsold Wii's lifetime sales, the original PlayStation's lifetime sales, the PlayStation 4's lifetime sales, the Game Boy and the Game Boy Color's lifetime sales. It is now...
Sorry, what are you talking about? I wasn't even
paying
attention.
The Nintendo Switch console.
I'm still mad.
I'm not repeating all that. The Nintendo Switch console, Lockie, is now the third best-selling console in history. It has sold 129 million units, trailing the Nintendo DS, which is at 154 million, and the PlayStation 2, which is at 155. Pretty fucking wild. What do you think of Nintendo Switch being... Look, by the end of its life cycle, it very well could be the best-selling console in history. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we'll say to date. Look, I'm not surprised because the global population is rising, so console generations eclipsing the previous one is kind of a bare minimum. Like, you'd have to really fail as a console developer to not... meet the at least what you achieved for the previous generation, because you have a wider network of consumers to tap into. So there's that. Also, the Switch replaced the handheld console genres from Nintendo, so you can't ignore that they're combining two of their previous markets that they used to tap into.
That's true.
So there's that. So I'm not surprised. But if you were to come back to me and ask me, do you think it's well earned? I would say, fuck no.
Oh, okay.
Fuck no, it's not well earned. They didn't work hard on this. They pushed out the cheapest piece of shit product on the planet because they had a strong user base. They have well established franchise IP titles. They did them. They did some of them justice, but they know that even if they release like a stinker here and there, it's not going to really matter. So they had the easy, it was their race to win and they won. Did they really earn, you know, maintaining that title? I don't think so. Just take a look at their UI on that console. Fucking take a look at the eStore and look how shitty it is, how slow it is, how unwieldy it is.
Yeah.
It's littered with crap. And you tell me that's a company that cares about the quality of their products and their consumers, and I would say you're absolutely joking.
Look, I agree with you in that I have all those same issues with Nintendo. I have big problems with Nintendo that I talk about on the show all the time. There's so much stuff that Nintendo gets away with purely because they're Nintendo, and I'm seeing Sony start to emulate some of that stuff now, and it's pissing me right the fuck off, and we'll get onto more of that later. But the Switch as a concept, I think, is a great console, something that you can take as a handheld but also works as an at-home console and you can put up on the TV. I think is a good concept. And like, as far as the whole, you know, the population and the market's bigger now argument, like, to some degree, yes, that does have an effect. But right now, the PlayStation 2 is still the best-selling console of all time, which was released in 2000. And the second best is the Nintendo DS, which was released in 2004. You know what I mean? If that was the case, then the PS3 would have sold better than the PS2, and then the PS4 would have sold better than the PS3. Whereas,
But you're ignoring the serious market changer, and this is where innovation comes into it quite significantly. They tapped into the family non-video game player market because it was an affordable DVD player, which were quite rare at that point in time.
Always reasons around it, but like. Yeah, like it's
no,
not
but that's
purely
a pretty big reason, because their sales were bolstered not only by people that consume gaming related products, but also a huge number of people that don't or wouldn't normally, because of what they were offering, and you can't ignore that. That's a major factor as to why those sales were so huge.
No, totally. Like you know, someone's grandma would have a fucking PS2 because it was a DVD player. Totally. You're 100% right. But then, you know, that doesn't explain the Nintendo DS. You know, you don't have any grandmas owning Nintendo DSs.
Yeah. You have grandmas owning the Xbox Series X because they offer high quality gaming and...
Grandmas love the value of Game Pass. It's undeniable. You're telling me all these games?
It's complete cognitive dissonance for our listeners. I'm arguing with my imaginary version of Aaron constantly talking up Microsoft Xbox at every opportunity.
Oh, actually, well, I've got an opportunity for you, Lockie. I know that something you try to do on this show whenever you get the opportunity is to make this show about anything but video games, particularly movies and TV shows.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I've got your chocolate in my peanut butter, Lockie. Well, that sounded a bit...
All right. Yep.
Sounded a bit dirty. I don't know why, because there's video games and movies. This article comes out of Dexerto and was written by Ethan Dean. The next outing from Naughty Dog and Sony Pictures looked to be a live-action take on the classic platformer Jak and Daxter. My Time to Shine Hello, who previously leaked full scripts for Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania and Black Panther Wakanda Forever, is the trusted source behind the info. Oh, this is a somebody's leaking. Do the drops. I forgot that this is a somebody's leaking. Drop sounds. Go now. You gotta listen to the show sometime, Lockie. That's not what I was referring to.
Oh.
According to My Time to Shine Hello, Ruben Fleischer, who directed Uncharted and Venom, will helm production of the Jak and Daxter film. Tom Holland and Chris Pratt are supposedly the top picks to play the duo. The leaker says that Tom Holland will play the role of Jak, while Pratt will lend his voice to his peculiar sidekick, Daxter. Holland and Pratt have worked together previously in Avengers Infinity War and the Pixar film Onward.
Yeah, of course they are. They're just so marketable. They're just so bankable. Oh, my God. They're going to bring such a wonderful, bland, marketable experience and demographic into it. Oh, how wonderful.
Do you reckon Chris Pratt's going to get in there and go, "It's-a me, a Chris Pratt." And then they'll be like, "No, wrong video game character you're voicing. This is Daxter. Come on, man. Get your shit together." Why is Chris Pratt the go-to for... He's not even a fucking voice actor. He always just does Chris Pratt.
He's a voice actor now. Yeah, but he's a voice actor now. He's Mario.
You're not a voice actor if your voice is always just your own voice. I'm sorry. Like, fuck you. Then again, Katie Seagal.
We have so few actors that actually bring in a following and a demographic because of their name. Like, I suppose the fact that he's managed to become one of the only actors on the planet left that can do that is an achievement, but I just find him so bland.
Yeah.
He's such a... He's just so goddamn acceptable. He's just so damn passable. He does pass wherever he
wants. I adored Chris Pratt in Parks and Rec. I thought his character was great and he did a great job with that character.
Oh, yeah, and Parks and Rec was great, but everything from after that is just like, he's just so...
Oh, no.
He's so okay.
I rate him in Guardians 1 for sure, but then the stuff they did with his character in the later Guardians and Marvel stuff, I wasn't a fan of. And then, I don't know, the most recent Guardians movie, I watched it the other day on Disney Plus, and like, Chris Pratt was, he was there. You know, and he just sort of...
That's all he needs to be.
It was... Ugh, I don't know.
That's his power. That's his amazing superhero power in today's age. He's just sort of there, and he's so incredibly popular and propped up and makes so much money. That's his superpower. He's able to thrive in mediocrity. I don't know.
I swear that he had some stuff where he commented on like lockdowns and stuff as well too. He's done a lot of weird stuff that have made people upset.
Oh yeah, all the Christian stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
His PR group is so funny. Like, cause yeah, he strikes me as deeply religious, and I think his PR group has to work so hard to keep all of that shit sort of outside of the public eye.
They're killing it because he gets so much work still. So much work.
Oh, he's doing so well. But I think we've got a bit of like a Tom Cruise situation on our hands. Not exactly the same, but like I reckon his PR team is working overtime.
Yeah, but look, at least Tom Cruise, he's awful, but he has charisma when he's on screen.
Oh no, Tom Cruise is a way better actor.
Oh yeah,
he's way more talented. I like he's way crazier. He's more interesting in both lenses. But I just see a little bit of Chris Pratt in that sort of vein. He's not quite as interesting and eccentric.
Yeah.
Like even his weird crazy is kind of boring. But yeah, I definitely see like a watered down echo.
Well, look, Chris Pratt playing Daxter is not the only Sony news this week that's going to make you groan. And look, this is all just a leak, so it may not be true, but this will definitely make you groan. And it's not a leak. It is true. It's been released, this information by Sony. The PS Plus is getting a price increase. So the already super expensive PS Plus for the 12-month subscriptions, the ones that are supposed to be the best value for people, it's going up all over the world. So in the US, it's going to be going up from $60 to $80, so $59.99 to $79.99. In Australia, currently it's it's $80 for a year, and it's going to be going up to $96. This is for base PS Plus. This is just so you can get the three games they give you a month and play games online with your friends. It's going to now cost you nearly $100 a year. If you want PS Plus Extra, the tier that's similar to Game Pass, in the US, it's going up from $100 a year to $135. And in Australia, it's going up from $135 to $170 a year. PS Plus Deluxe, the 12-month, the one that gets you the fucking classic games and stuff like that, and trials of some of the bigger games, free trials to play of some of the bigger games, in the US is going from $120 up to $160, an increase of $40. And in Australia, it's going from $155 to $197. Lockie, the price of the 12-month subscription has gone up drastically. It's like around 20-30% in most regions. What are your thoughts on Sony's decision here?
Well, I cancelled my subscription a couple of months ago, and I think I have one or two left on it because I did like the 12-month thing originally because it's quite cheap back then. So even when it was as cheap as it was back then, I still made the conscious decision to decide that it was not worth the money going forward. So them increasing that not worth the money going forward has only compounded in my view that it is not worth the money going forward.
It is a really gross price. I was so annoyed because, look, PS Plus Extra, I don't mind as a service. It has a lot of games on there, but everything on there I've played basically. So it's really only worth it for me for those times when I'm just looking for something obscure to play when there's not a lot of stuff coming out, or for they do get some like indies or AA games day and dot. Like they got Stray the day that came out, and Humanity as well, which for those it's been great. I've been able to just, you know, it's already in my year-long subscription. Fantastic. But then once that was coming up to running out, they do this 30% deal every year. Once a year, you can buy a year and get 30% off. But I didn't want to do Extra anymore. And for some reason, it wouldn't allow me to get the 30% off for buying 1 year of just Essential. And I have no idea why. And I'm like, well, that means I've just got to let it roll over and go month to month, basically, at this point, because I can't buy a year. So I'm probably going to end up just cancelling my PS Plus subscription altogether. I've already changed it down to Essential now. But as soon as I'm done playing Baldur's Gate 3 with you and Anthony, I'm cancelling that shit immediately.
That's pretty much the only reason why I'm going to have it going is to give the online experience a go. But that's it after that, because it's decent. Like, it's not terrible. It's not terrible. We got to play some pretty great games through it. If you're a fan of Horizon Zero Dawn, the sequel came out through that a month or two ago, and they charged the fucking moon for that baseline price. So, there's value to be had there if you genuinely do enjoy the games that go up there. But I think that month-to-month thing, people will think twice about that now, because there's just less and less incentive to lock yourself in for a long period of time. You kind of will do it every now and again to get all the games out of your system, clear that backlog that's sort of built up over time, and then you'll move on because it is getting increasingly expensive.
I don't understand why anyone would buy a year at this point. Like, unless you're completely new to video games, you've just bought a PS5, because there's easily a year's worth of games.
You buy a year because you're trying to get that discount. Like they still have that discount incentive, but it's like fucking 10%, so what?
Yeah,
I'm talking out of my ass. I don't know the exact numbers.
Yeah, but you're right. It's just nowhere near as good a value. Right now, if you... In Australia, it's $800 for a PS5. So, the 1 year of the highest level of PS Plus tiers is nearly a quarter of the price of the console itself. That is a really hard sell to somebody. That is such a hard sell, considering that the Deluxe only just adds a bunch of classic games and stuff as well. I don't know. I'm so sick of Sony's decision-making around all of this. They have a more complicated and inferior service to Game Pass. Game Pass is available on PC as well too, which, you know, we can't use PS Plus Extra on PC. And Game Pass has all the first party stuff day and date. Now, is Xbox's first party stuff as good? No, but Sony isn't putting Horizon Forbidden West there day and date. You're having to wait a year for that to come to the service. God of War Ragnarok's still not on there. It's nearly been out for a year at this point. So there is... It just sucks to see them putting up a price when it's already more expensive than Game Pass and, in my opinion, slightly worse service as well. Sony, sort your fucking shit out. Get fucked. Speaking of Game Pass... It's time to talk about the games coming to Game Pass in September. So, Starfield is coming to Early Access September 1st, but September 6th...
I thought you were going to lead with, like, some non-game that no one gives a fuck about and, like, make a big deal about that.
I'm sure there's some. Yeah, there's definitely some. So, Early Access, if you have to, like, pay extra on top of Game Pass to get the Deluxe Edition September 1st. Gree is coming September 5th to Game Pass. Starfield, it will be coming out for everybody on Game Pass on September 6th, which is a Wednesday, so it'll be 2 days after this comes out. Lies of P is coming to Game Pass September 19th. Party Animals is coming September 20th to Game Pass. Payday 3 is coming September 21st. And Cocoon is coming September 29th. Lockie.
Lies of P.
Yeah, I was going to say that was...
Lies of P.
I didn't realize it was coming to Game Pass. That's freaking awesome.
I didn't realize it was as well. I'm happy to hear about that. I was genuinely happy to hear that because I got a Game Pass at the moment. I'm going to cancel that as well at some point because I don't think that's the value's there either. But I'll... while I have it, I'll definitely check out Lies of P because it was one of those games where... I think it was kind of like a AA development cycle. And I'm not expecting the moon from this game, but I really liked what I saw in their gameplay showcases. I think it was earlier in the year.
Honestly, it's we have Bloodborne at home. That's exactly what it is. It's Bloodborne, but feels a bit jankier and doing some sort of different ideas with the parody and stuff.
That's fine.
For me, after playing the demo, which there is a demo available, people who want to check it out on PlayStation, and I think on PC as well. After playing the demo, I was like, nah, it's not something I would buy, but on Game Pass... You know, if you've got a PC that can run it, or if you have an Xbox Series X, fucking give that a go. Obviously Starfield's the big one. If you have an Xbox and you like RPGs, it doesn't sound like it's going to be a genre-defining title, but it sounds like you're going to have a really good time with Starfield.
It better be. This game is the reason why we don't have Elder Scrolls 6 anytime sooner.
And that is true.
It's got some big boots to fill because they decided to do a little pivot into fucking space away from their big, memorable, profitable, beloved franchise. So, yeah, better be... I'm so sure it's going to be like a fucking 7. It'll be passable. I'll be disappointed in the sense that if it's not really fucking amazing, this will have been a wasted venture for a lot of businesses.
Yeah.
Because the investments that went into this product was of the sort of, you know, the dream of creating another Elder Scrolls IP. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And you know what else we'll see how it goes? The PS Plus games for September. We have the Saints Row Reboot, the PS4 and PS5 editions.
What? Black- I'm sorry, what? But I thought they just closed down.
Well, yeah, it's I guess Sony...
What?
I guess Sony bought the chance to use it on their way out the door. Yep. I don't know if
they got it on sale, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, wow. It was like 70-something% off when it came to Steam. Yeah, that game did not do very well. The PS4 and PS5 versions will be available on PS Plus. Black Desert Traveler Edition will be available on PS Plus, as well as Generation Zero, an Avalanche game, which review score on IGN was pretty close to zero. Got a 4 out of 10, so...
Oh.
You can see the kind of week that the kind of month we're having here on PS Plus. They're doing the thing that the Xbox Games with Gold did and trying to tell everyone, hey, pay a bit more and get good games because we're not going to give you shit on base PS Plus. Lockie, do you like the look of any of these titles?
Nah.
So, Black Desert, you remember that Crimson Desert trailer, that one that was doing all the crazy Assassin's Creed shit from Gamescom?
Yeah.
That we were talking about in the chat last week? Black Desert's the MMO by that developer, the thing that sort of made them famous, that led to Crimson Desert.
Yeah, that's why I'm not interested. I was vaguely aware that they've been spruiking that for a while on the Steam store, and I'm like, that looks like a giant pile of shit, and I am not interested.
Yep. I am right there with you. And you know what I'm vaguely aware of, Lockie? The game's coming up in the next week. We have Chance of Sanaa coming to PS4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and PC. Monochrome Mobius, Rights and Wrongs Forgotten.
No, too PS5 long. Or too PS4. Long. No.
Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis coming to iOS. Warstride...
Nope. iOS. Crap. Move on.
Warstride Challenges coming to PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC.
Anything with war in the title is shit unless it's God of War. Move on.
Anonymous semicolon code. So not a colon, a semicolon.
Sounds like a JRPG. No.
Oh, 100%. Fae Farm... coming to PC and Nintendo Switch.
No, September I don't like 8th. Farm Sims.
And NBA 2K24 also coming out to September 8th games, to every platform. Shout out to Hunter. I know he's excited for that one. But what it's not mentioning in this list is something that's coming September 6th. And that is the awesome Baldur's Gate 3 to PlayStation 5. Finally, our Sony Sims PlayStation ponies are going to get our chance to get our hands on some dragon dicks and bear bums. Let's go!
I think it's fair for there not to be so much fanfare for that release because, like, Baldur's Gate has been out, has released. I'm using finger quotes even though this is a podcast. So many times. It's released, it's been in beta for forever and, you know, the big global release has already happened.
Yeah. So. No, it's definitely not going to be heaps of hype. I'm hyped, though, because I get to play
I'm hyped because I get to see you play this. I don't know if you'll like it, though. I wouldn't have recommended it to you outside of this.
I think, you know, I'm probably not going to... you know, think the gameplay is the most fun shit ever, but I really love me a deep story with lots of narrative choices and stuff like that. Anything where there's situations where I can, like, talk my way out of it and stuff, I fucking love that. That's, like, give me. Whenever I'm playing, like, Outer Worlds, I'm always going charisma up the wazoo so I get all the cool different persuade options and stuff like that. So, yeah. No, I'm pumped.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's a good RPG from that standpoint. But yeah, you know, there's still tactics and stuff in it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very curious to see how I'm going to drive with the gameplay. But you know what? I'm going to have friends with me. So even if I hate it, I'm sure it's still going to be fun. I don't think I'm going to hate it anyway. I think I'll enjoy the gameplay.
I'm interested to see how we get along with the co-op because it's a long game.
Yeah, I'm curious too. Like, it's going to be easier, obviously, than trying to run an actual D&D campaign, but like, we're still going to have us all there together to play.
I reckon it would be easier just running a D&D campaign than wrangling us to play this game, to be honest, and for a couple of reasons, because one of the things with D&D that they'll never be able to truly capture the magic with it, like I love D&D and RPG styled games, but they won't capture the magic of basically the improv aspect of D&D. D&D is all improv. D&D is all your character thinking about putting yourself in the mind of the character and what you would do in those situations, and a lot of insane, hilarious, interesting, embarrassing fuckery comes as a response of that mm. you just can't capture in games because it has to be scripted. So like, different beast.
Yeah.
Close, you get to see sort of the world and the trappings and the structure, but you got to remember, as a D&D campaign master or whatever, you can say and have your characters respond in whatever you think will be the most interesting or engaging way to move the plot forward that you just can't replicate through scripting.
But also, we don't need a dungeon master in this, so everyone gets to play. Yeah,
that's right.
But yeah, look, how about Lockie, we take a brief break and then we jump back on in with the games that we've been playing.
All right, let's do it. All right, see you in a bit.
Lockie, you are not our guest. You're our co-host. You're not our guest. So,
oh yeah,
I'm the guest and host now, and I'm gonna start off with impressions, tradition, things I normally say to kick off impressions.
That's lovely. That was a really smooth way to say that.
I'm a very well-spoken and practiced podcaster, so I know how to word speak. Now, nice. I talked about Immortals of Avium last week on the show, and I said I was having a really, really good time with it, and I have now concluded my really, really good time with Immortals of Avium sans doing the Platinum, which I think I am going to do, and I really enjoyed it. I had a great time, but
nice.
I feel kind of bad. There was so much stuff that I wanted to say about it last week, but I was like really tired and a little bit tipsy. We were having a really, really long episode, so I didn't get to say.
Yeah, it was one of the boozy episodes.
I didn't get to say or think of all the things that I wanted to say. And there are a bunch of nitpicks that I have with Immortals of Avium. If you're not unfamiliar with Immortals of Avium, it's a first-person shooter by Ascendant Studios, who are being published by EA, and it's first-person shooter, except you're wielding magic. What have you. All the stuff I said last week holds up. I really enjoy the gameplay. The game looks great. It's not going to blow your mind, but it looks fantastic. The game plays really great. The story is shit. Where the little nitpicks and stuff come in is just like, it always happens with games, even if you really enjoy them. I think if you really enjoy them, the nitpicks almost stand out more, but just some of the ways they handle the powers is kind of odd. So I know you're going to hate this, Lockie. I know you're not a fan of ammo management, and for some reason they made the decision in this game to have the magic work kind of like ammunition. So your three basic powers, where you got, you know, your red for the close up high damage thing, the green for the high rate of fire, and the blue for like the, you know, high damage distance rifles style thing, they all have to be reloaded, right? You're using magic, but you have to, like, reload your fist. So, say you're using the shotgun.
So, you have to constantly cycle through it.
Well, not really. Like, you don't have, like, an ammo limit. You can use your magic permanently, but you have a clip size, and once your clip runs out, you have to do a magic hand wavy movement, and then it refills your clip. Now, I don't really mind that, but my issue with it is, like, that hand wavy movement is like a way to regain your energy, right? Why doesn't you're a magic being? Why doesn't that just slowly refill over time? If you've used each one of your different kinds of magic once, then when you scroll through your different powers, you have to like reload your fist for every power before you go into your next battle, which just feels weird. It feels very out of place in a game where you're using magic. But the most egregious thing is you have like your special ability powers. So if you hold R1 and press square, triangle, circle, X, or bash, the R3 button, then you'll have a special ability tied to it. So obviously that has a meter, so you can only use it so many times, and those abilities have a bit of a cooldown as well too. That has limited ammunition. So you have to find these things on the battlefield called mana crystals. Using it, you hold square to use a mana crystal and it will refill your mana gauge so you can use those special abilities again. Rather than it having it just refill out of time. Why am I doing ammo management in a game based around magic? It's fucking weird. Now, granted, there is loads of mana crystals around.
It's not ammo management.
It is.
I've already fucked it. It's not ammo management. It's ammo magic. Magic ammo management.
You were totally so close. Different. You were so close.
Yes, I know. I executed it so poorly. Also, I like that one of your spells is bash.
Well, it's like your
so magical.
It's like your R3 move, like your character will use a magic fist and go bang, and it's called bash.
Oh, does he? Oh, at least it's magic, but that's all funny.
Yeah, it's all very
at least it is magic. A magic theme. Yeah, it's magic fist. Instead of like he just bashes him. Which I just find to be honest, now that I think on it, it would have been funnier if he's a magician, but that's like when you're out of mana or whatever, you just fucking clock the guy.
Well, it's funny because the enemies you fight, they do use melee weapons, but you don't. You just have your left and right hand different.
You're a wizard. You're focusing on all your wizard shit. I'm glad. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm glad it doesn't do melee stuff. I'm happy with what it does. But, you know, speaking of the mana crystals and having to hold square to refill your mana, every single interaction in the game is done by pressing square. Now, unfortunately, they've made it so doing that is incredibly finicky. You have to have the camera facing the right way. Your character has to be standing in a certain position. Then the thing has to pop up, and then you can hit square and hold it to do your interaction. But because there was like a slight delay in that popping up, the amount of times I would have just used one bar of mana and then I wasted an entire mana crystal because it's tied to hold square when I was just trying to fucking open a door or pull a lever. Super, super annoying. But it's just like these little, couple of these real nitpicky things that just pissed me off in game design where it's like, how did no one see that tying interact and this to the same button is going to be an issue? Or at least make it so the interaction is super forgiving. Like if you're in the general area and you're looking at it, you can hit square, you know?
And it's clearly a reload mechanic. So my question, because the way you're describing it before, it sounds like it doesn't automatically reload if you exhaust your mana.
Oh, it does. It does. Use your entire clip of blue, red, or green magic, then your character will automatically do the hand wavy movement and refill it.
Okay.
But you use it all and then quickly change to another magic, next time you switch back to that magic, you'll have to do the hand wavy movement before you can start using it again.
Yeah, so it's exactly like it's exactly like an FPS shooter, but the trappings of magic instead of bullets.
Except you can't run out of ammo. Like you can only run out of ammo for your special abilities. Your regular blue, green, and red magic, you have unlimited of that.
Yeah.
So it's super super weird. And by the end of the game, it wasn't doing enough weird shit with the magic for me to feel like it really justified being a Magic base game. Like, all the Magic was fun to use and play around with, and I did like the abilities, but they're all quite basic. Like, once you had your, you know, your assault rifle style green magic and your rifle style blue magic, you kind of got what was going on. I didn't get to use the javelin blue magic, which was
spell.
Cool. It was like the only one
where
they
spelled a punch.
Well, that's the thing.
I cast punch.
Every single one of the other abilities were all just very similar iterations of themselves. Yeah. So the shotgun, it was either you could get one that had four shots in the clip that did less damage, or one that you had to reload every time you shoot it, but it does higher damage. It's like, well, that's not very creative. You could have done some way cooler stuff with these abilities. You don't ever get like any things where you can freeze people. It would have just been cool to see them play around with some more interesting spells.
Yeah,
like,
no stat. Yeah, nothing that affects status.
Yeah,
no.
Like
they're lazy.
They kind of have elemental in that, you know, if you're facing a green enemy, you use your green magic to kill them more efficiently. Yeah, exactly.
They did that shit in Harry Potter. I hated it.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. Hate that shit. Match up the colors, you fucking toddlers.
Well, at least in Harry Potter, if you use a freezing spell on someone, it actually freezes them, where there's a thing you can do to slow people down, but there's no like,
oh yeah, they put a lot of effort in, and like, you know, no shade to Harry Potter, they put a lot of effort into making it feel like the spells were unique and had an effect, but I really hate the gameplay mechanic of challenge being you use the same color as the thing that you're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very boring. It's very honestly infantile. It's like fucking 3-year-olds can match colors.
Yeah. If you saw it have like more of an effect on the characters, it might be a little bit cooler, you know, like if blue magic froze enemies and red magic set enemies on fire, which it sort of kind of does, but not really, then yeah, that's super cool. But look, some of the abilities that you upgrade are cool, but it's more like just, you know, you're doing more damage or like, you know, getting an extra dash. There's different things like that, but nothing that's really going to blow your mind. There's one that, you know, my blue ability, it will like throw rocks up from beneath the enemies. It will do that twice now by the time I fully upgrade it. Cool. Yeah, so look, all these nitpicks aside, I actually did really love Immortals of Avium. I don't know what it was about it. It was like the gameplay. I even got into the really schlocky story as well. The main character's awful. Oh, correction. His name is Jack, just with a K. So I was wrong in my my insult of them having a basic name that they didn't even change to drop the C. They did do that. It's Jack with J-A-K. So it's slightly more interesting than just J-A-C-K.
We're talking about Jack and Daxter now, right?
Apparently. So yeah, okay. Immortals of Avium. Right. I will give it 8 mana crystals out of 12 aviums. Yeah. Oh, one more criticism. The dialogue. It's bad, but they do something really annoying in that it's like this weird mixture between modern ways of speaking and like old school medieval style. So they'll be like, oh, the Roshanians are getting into the Palathon and they're trying to destroy the Pentaside. And then your character will turn around and talk about how Immortals is a branding thing. And will say, oh, so-and-so's got me by the balls. It just uses this weird modern vernacular that just very much clashes with the old school medieval, you know, fantasy world thing they're going for. It's bizarre. It's a really, really weird game. It's doing really, really poorly. Apparently its concurrents on Steam are in the hundreds. I hope Ascendant Studios get to make something else after this, because you can clearly see a lot of love's gone into this game.
Oh, no, they're done.
No, look, we'll see.
Oh, no, they're done. Poor sales.
Look, there's a lot of talent there. Who knows? It's their first game. I hope they get another shot to make something. But I guess that, remains to be seen. But that's where I will leave the Immortals of Avium. Lockie, what did you play over the last week?
Okay, so I have been, let's say I've been picking at games. I've been, you know, taste testing games. I've been trying them out, seeing if they're the right fit for me, and then moving on and then playing a fuck ton of Hades. That has been my general experience of this week. I've tried a couple of games. I've tried to have an open mind, and I've decided quite early on, you know what? This game just isn't for me. It's not their fault. I have grown very particular and jaded, and clearly it's apparently very hard to please me at the moment, or the type of gamer that I am. And so I've just moved on. That is a great introduction to talk about Armored Core Rubicon.
Hey!
So let's get into this. I've completely fucked the order. I meant to start off with Sea of
Stars.
That's
fine. Let's talk about it. Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon.
Yeah, let's talk about both of them. I'm going to smash through Sea of Stars really quickly. Sea of Stars is a pixelated RPG that is available for free on Microsoft Game Pass if you want to give it a go. It is a gorgeous, lovingly artistically designed game in terms of how it appears. If you like those old-timey pixel graphics, they do a great job. It looks fantastic. All the animations are, to my opinion, excessively detailed and rich. And I actually think it's to a discredit of some of the other things I really wish they'd focused on. So the story is very by the numbers. If you are new to RPG games and stories, this might grab you. But if you're familiar with the franchise, you'll likely find it very ho-hum, very, very bare bones, minimal offerings. So the problem with this game is that it's a good entry-level game, and that's the best way that I can pitch it. And friend of the show, Aaron, is giving it a go. He doesn't play a lot of RPGs, so they're quite new to him. Apparently, he's enjoying the absolute shit out of this game. For me, the game very much reminds me of Paper Mario-style RPG gameplay, where it's very basic, sort of designed for people that are very new to that game and genre. You don't have a lot of options to work with. You start off with fucking two abilities, and then you can either attack or use your abilities in your two characters, and it's like that for a while. Sure, they build in some bravely default mechanics, which I don't find particularly thrilling or interesting either.
What's that?
But it's where every now and again you can sink in battle points to strengthen your moves, the potency of your moves and stuff. Mm. It then changes the game strategy around keeping alive and peppering them with damage to be able to then go all out on your big move once you have enough battle points sort of in your arsenal. And I've never... That's always been fine, but that's never been like this thrilling game-changing aspect of turn-based strategies. And it's been exactly the same since Bravely Default, and a lot of games do it, but it's never really added or taken away from the experience to me. It's just been something else that's there. But if you don't have enough variety in your abilities, customization, classes, characters, things to choose from, things that have genuine choice, that have your that has your brain thinking, okay, how do I optimize the gameplay strategy that I want to take and get the most out of that, and then cheese the game. If it doesn't have that level of thought that can sort of go into it and it's on the rails, then I'm going to call it a bad RPG. Now, whether or not it's objectively a bad RPG boils down to likely the experience of the person playing it. So if you're new to the genre and all you're really looking for is those early level trappings because it's all new to you anyway, you won't have the standards that I'll be looking for. And yeah, from that. So from my perspective, I just couldn't get through this fucking game. It was too basic in summary.
Yeah, it's a big no from me. I just had a look at some gameplay. That's why the sound just started blasting through the mic a second ago. And yeah, it's, you know, you got the pixelated art style as well too. Very, very reminiscent of, like, you know, PS1, PS2 era RPGs.
Yeah, but Chained Echoes came out a couple of, half a year ago, and that was fucking great. Yeah. So, like, you can do that. But even that was made by one guy, and you could see, like, this was better produced in terms of the effort that went into the fluidity of all the animation designs. But I would have been way happier if they deprioritized that, shifted all of the funding and effort that went into making it look gorgeous into really, you know, making it a little bit more graphically easier to produce, but focus on the actual gameplay and variety and complexity and mechanics. This is the opposite. And so they really went into the aesthetic and put all their money and eggs in that basket. And that's what lost it for me, yeah. Where, like, I don't know, you can do that and be effective. I mean, Final Fantasy 16 is an example of that, where it is all aesthetic. It is all production costs and values and how cool the story is and how well acted it is. And it is all of those things. But the gameplay itself is quite basic and limited. And I'm sick of that.
Yeah,
I'm so sick of that. I'm happy to get... I think Bayonetta is an example of where, you know, they could reduce a hell of a lot of the customization and options to focus on making the graphics look a little bit nicer and all that. But their priorities are right, where it's like, no, just focus on making it an excellent gameplay experience, and then you can polish it up later if there's money left, not the other way around. Yeah. This was the other way around.
Look, I know Aaron's really digging it. He's loving it. It's good, and it's getting, like, decent reviews. It's got a 7.9 user score on Metacritic with a 88 Metascore, which is a very solid review score, but it sounds very much like, yeah, well, it's baby's first JRPG kind of a thing. Yeah,
for sure. 7.9, yeah, on it's not an 8.
Well,
I just, and 8.3 on PS5. Ugh. Yeah, nah.
Okay, it looks like you're sabotage studio.
This game is a 7 at best.
I just looked up. They're called Sabotage Studio. That's what...
Right. That's okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about...
another 7 at best. Hey! Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon. That's the other thing I've played as well, Lockie. And I think you and I both noped out pretty early on with this one. So for people who aren't familiar, it's a new From Software title. They're going back to a series that they did on, like, PS1, PS2 days. This is an old-ass series, and it's been a long time since we've had one. And it's all mech fights. Ooh,
From Software. I can't wait to see what From Software's got to bring out this time. It is going too great with you, because it does not feel like a From Software game.
Look, I actually think it's cool to see them doing something different from the Souls-like formula, which they've been doing now for fucking well over a decade.
Yeah, but cool enough to spend your money and time to actually consume the product?
No.
The end product?
Yeah, exactly. So I picked it up when I was working on...
Same issue with Saints Row, right? Like, it's cool to see it, but I'm not going to give them money because it's not good, but it's cool to see.
Look, I'd say Saints Row isn't a good game. The recent reboot, I played it, it's not a good game. I don't think this is a bad game by any stretch, but I know it's definitely not for me. Now, I picked it up on Sunday while I was working, because, you know, I was so busy with stuff, I had no time to play it on the Friday, and I played it once when I was, like, really tired. I was like, nah, this is not for me, not in the slightest. I'm looking at the customization system, and it, like, you have to factor in the weight of the mech when you're designing and all the stuff. It's just, it's fucking in depth, and my brain was like, nah, I can't do this. Like, at least in From Software I can get a bit of a start just going around killing shit and exploring, but This is very level based. You have your yep. mission. You go in, do your mission. You come out, and then you can, if you want to respec your mech, you can. If not, you just go back into the next mission. Some of the missions are really short. You'll have done within a couple of minutes. I got right up to the end of the first chapter, and the second time I played it, I had a lot more fun with it. Like the first time, I think I was just tired. I just wasn't sort of in my frame of mind to sort of comprehend what I was supposed to be doing. But then the second time, I actually found it like quite easy. It's for a From Software game. I can't believe how easy it is. Not to say that it's not challenging, because there's definitely a couple of bosses I got stuck on. Ultimately, I fought the boss at the end of chapter one probably 10 times and nearly killed it a couple of times without having to do any tinkering. But after that, I was like, okay, I've seen what this game has to show and it's not for me. Like, doing a quick mission, no chance to explore, no chance to do anything like that, and then just coming out and redesigning your mech. I don't know. I guess if I clicked with the combat a bit more, if I liked the feel of the combat a bit more, maybe I would have been more into it, but I don't know. Sometimes it feels satisfying to use the mech, but I just don't get the same kind of joy out of that you get out of taking out a boss in your typical From Software game as what you do in Armored Core 6. I don't know, Lockie, how much did you play?
Oh, I played the first level and noped out of it after that. I was like, okay, I've seen, like, I admire the idea of it, but the execution for me was like, this feels so incomplete. It feels low budget, honestly. It feels like it was put together on a shoestring budget, which it probably was. It just did not... The graphics felt incredibly old. Like, the textures itself were very old, but it had modern level reflections and lighting, and that and all of that just came together for me. I was just thinking cheap the entire time. And the gameplay style, I don't know. No real cutscenes, no real...
Oh, there's cutscenes.
Story. Yeah.
But yeah, the story's very...
The cutscene is where they slingshot you from the ship, and that's it.
No. There is, when you get further into it, there is actually, like, you'll get to a point in a mission where, like, a mech will come out and a character will say a few words, but it's very much reminiscent of how From Software normally does cutscenes, where it's like, it's a boss introduction or something like that.
Yeah.
And,
Is it engaging? Is my question?
No. So the way the story's told is you have your handler.
Okay, great. So it offers what I'm asking for, but it's not what I want because it's still shitty. So that's good. That's nice to know.
You have a handler who gives you your missions, and he does most of the giving the world building and whatnot. When you're in a,
I know he's just constantly talking.
He doesn't
to
shut
you,
the
and
fuck
I'm just
up.
Like, I know, and. Immediately, I was like, oh, I don't like this at all. I don't like having this person, this hollow voice from nowhere, just tell me constantly, like, what's going on. And I'm like, mate, you need to stick me in a room because I can't be focusing on shooting these people and counting for the reload for my missile thing to go off. And, like, all the... Okay, so... Oh, my God, this fucking game. So... What frustrated me the most was immediately whatever the cooldown cycle was for your moves and your attacks. Now, I am sure that you can customize those attacks and things early on, but their offering of that straight out of the gate for me was like, oh my God, the cooldowns on these things are taking so fucking long. I'm spending all of my time and mental energy just dodging and hiding behind walls waiting for things to cool down.
Yeah.
So boring.
Yeah.
And then I have this guy just talking to me endlessly about fucking whatever, about this world I care nothing about, and the intricacies of finding this stupid fucking card while I'm just trying to count the cooldowns. And it's like, mate, wait your fucking turn.
It's weird to go from typical From Software Souls-like stuff where you don't hear much dialogue at all to just constant chirping. You also, the enemies will say stuff, so you get a bit more of a glimpse into the world through what the enemies say.
At least Navi, when you put her on, at least the game would pause so you can actually listen to what she's saying and digest it. But like with him, he's just going on in real time and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, and you'll get characters that'll call you in between your missions as well. Like, you'll finish a mission and someone will be like, hey, I'm from this corporation. Good job. We've got our eye on you, guy. And the whole thing is like...
That reminds me of another game I've been playing recently, Cyberpunk. So I picked up Cyberpunk and that's my core issue of that game, where there's just constant talking to you. And then after the cutscene's over of all the talking, you then have someone else talking to you on the phone. And like, I'm an introverted nature and I just don't like this level of human contact in general.
Would you say it affected you right to your armored core?
Yeah, they weren't able to pierce my armor, that's for sure. It was I could see there was a lot of fluidity. I love the fluidity of the movements and the dash and the boost and the rockets. I thought that looked beautiful. And there was the funniest fucking thing on I saw on Facebook where they had CJ from Grand Theft Auto 3. Was it Grand Theft Auto 3? No, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. And yeah, they just had him fucking flying around with the mech boots and it just looked great. And I think that's what it was missing for me. It was missing the humanity. I don't think I can get through a game just seeing endless machines. I think I just don't think that's the right sort of game for me. I can deal with a bit of mech, but I need humanity sprinkled in. Even if it's just like a robot face that looks like a human, but it's plasticky. It's just too alien for me.
Look, I think did you beat the boss at the end of that first level?
Yeah, I beat the boss. And after that, I was like, yeah, I'm not jiving a refund. They asked full price for this game. It's not a cheap game.
Yeah, yeah. I thought there was a really cool mission early on. It was like...
felt like a $50 game at best in terms of the overall quality I was seeing and effort into the production.
Yeah, there was a mission, like three or four missions in, that I thought was really cool, where there's this giant fuck off mining AT-AT, or is it AT-ST, which is the one that's the big dog walker? I can't remember.
No, AT&T is the phone company.
Well, you get to bring down one of these things, like you take out its leg and it collapses and dust shoots up everywhere. And that was really cool and really satisfying. And I found it satisfying to use the energy sword as well. That was cool. But none of that stuff was enough to pull me through the game. Like, just sometimes the gameplay would just kind of shit me. I just find it actually annoying. The UI, I think there's way too much going on. I get it, you're in a mech, whatever, but like,
oh my god, yes,
holy fuck, I don't 100%. Need to see what orientation I'm fucking at with all the fucking numbers, right? Like, just let me know when I need to shoot my missiles.
That was the first thing I did. I went into the settings to look for the UI gameplay to make it minimalist, because I'm like, there's so much crap on the screen that's unnecessary. I don't need all these thousands of circles to know that the center of the screen is where I need to be aiming for
Could you do that on PC? Were you able
to? No, you can't. God. And that was straight out of the gate. They were telling me, no, you have to play it this way. No, this is the game we're playing. I'm like trying to make the graphics look better and the textures maxed out look like dog shit. Like, and they're like, no, this is what it is. And I'm like, well, fuck you. I think they were asking for $70 for the game. Yeah. I'm like, this is not a $70 game. This is $40, $50 max in terms of production value that went into this thing if I liked the overall genre and feel for the game. So I think it's a pretty mediocre quality game to come out of FromSoft to ask for that sort of price. Bad game.
It cost me $88 dollary dues, and I will be returning it tomorrow. I'm not going to continue with it.
That's not worth $88.
But for me, I don't know. There's tons of customization here. You can put your mech on fucking tank treads. You can do all kinds of crazy shit with your mech. And people who are vibing with it are really, really vibing with it. All I'll say is if you're a From Software fan of their recent shit, yeah, it is definitely not going to be for you. But, like, I don't know. If you're a fan of this series, Armored Core, you're probably going to enjoy it because it definitely has those old school, you know, that weird mission-based thing where you're getting kicked in and out and stuff. Like, that's very old school.
Yeah, because it's dated. It's dated and stuck in its ways and not, like, for all the reasons that someone that likes the older series, I don't think this appeals to anyone outside of that group.
Yeah, it's definitely not for me. I know that for sure. But look, because I'm not finishing it, I will not leave a review score on Armored Core 6. I know you have anything.
No, I'm giving it a fucking 6. Armored Core 6, boom, just did it.
There you
Armored
go.
Core 6, 6 out of 10. How do you like that, FromSoft?
You are the From Software of game reviewers, Lockie. It's like, yeah, I'll play one mission in your game and give it 6 out of 10. Fuck you, I can do what Done. I want. Get good, game developers.
They had their chance. They had my attention and I formed an opinion. Done.
Oh, well, do you have any other opinions you'd like to share with our audience for this episode?
I think our audience has dealt with enough from me. This has been, what has it been? It's been like 3 weeks of negativity all just pent up and just thrown at our listeners. So, thank you all for listening. To the contrary of how it sounds, I am quite happy to be back. I think there are some interesting titles coming up down the line that I am actually interested in.
In saying that, you might not be on the show next week, though.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Most likely. But then after that, who knows?
Exactly.
Oh, dearie me.
I like it to be a pleasant surprise.
There you are. And if you like Lockie being on the show, leave us a rating or review wherever you happen to listen to the podcast. It's the best
no,
way.
No, don't do that. Because if they give negative ones, I'm booted. No, that's all right. Dear listeners, please give your feedback. We welcome all forms of feedback. But if you do want to fuck me off, still give us a number 5, but put in the review as well. Say I gave you a 5 for Lockie's shit. And we'll get it.
Well, those sounded like some wisdomous words. What do you think? Have you fulfilled that obligation?
Oh, absolutely. I'm all tapped out.
Well, you know what I do when I'm tapped out, Lockie? I use my regular sign-off and catchphrase or whatever.
Nice.
Sign-off, I guess? Catchphrase doesn't sound right. Then I'd be saying it like when something funny happens. I'd be like, take care of
yourself. Yeah, it's your sign-off.
It's a sign-off. It's a sign-off.
It's your sign-off.
It is. And it goes like this. Take care of yourselves and take care of one another.
Disgusting. Wow. All right. Is it the you're not shitting me. This is real?
This is real.
Wow.
Yep. I'll send you through the documentary at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I got to read on more of this. This is fascinating but so sad.
I actually felt bad for him watching the documentary. Like, this guy's just clearly very unwell, and the people around him, he just has so much money, he can do whatever he wants, so he's just able to live this really fucking mentally fucked life. So he's single, surprise, surprise. No one. He's been divorced.
He's feeding on the blood of his children. What fucking, you know, what woman wants that for their kid if they want to start a family?
He doesn't have time to date someone. His entire life revolves around keeping alive longer. Like, he's
dating people is the least of this guy's problem. He has a son that he's feeding off. Yeah, it's bonkers. To be honest, I'm even shocked that he would be, like, you know, documenting this publicly. Like, it's pretty ghoulish and humiliating. Like, anyway, I got to clearly, I've got a lot more to check out in this space. Clearly, I've got myself a documentary I got to watch.
Oh yeah,
sounds like fucking Tiger King insanity. All right, let's go.